Today's video is sponsored by Aura, and it's a really important time to be talking about them because hackers may have stolen the Social Security numbers of every American. Over 2.9 billion records were stolen from the National Public Data, which provides personal information to employers and others doing background checks. These stolen records include a person's full name, address, date of birth, phone number, and most importantly, Social Security number. And members of the hacker group have reportedly released this information for free online. Now, this could be incredibly dangerous to you because people can open up all different type of things in your name and you won't even know it. If you weren't taking precautions with your personal information online before this, then this should be a huge wake-up call. You've never been more vulnerable online than you are right now. But I'm not too worried about that because I use Aura. Aura monitors your personal data, including your Social Security number, across billions of data points like the dark web and public court records to detect and alert you to potential identity theft. They give you up to $5 million in identity theft insurance should the worst case scenario happen. They also provide a bunch of other features to keep you safe online, all inside one app. You can go to my link right now, aura.com/textualchatter, to try 14 days for free. That'll be enough time for Aura to find out if any of your personal data is exposed. I highly recommend you do this right now because not only is the National Public Data not going to do anything to help you, they probably aren't even going to face any repercussions for this leak. I'm not leaving myself and my family vulnerable to data breaches. If you don't want either, you can go to aura.com/textualchatter to try 2 weeks for free. Now back to the video. Welcome back to the Textual Talk Podcast. I'm your host, HD, and we got our co-host with us today.
Cyber Shorty.
And this is the first time we did a dual guest interview, but our guest has came here all the way from Austin, Texas, even though she is from the 504.
Yeah.
Her name is Miss Kalima Sims, and she's an IP attorney. So with everything that's going on right now with AI and copyright, and we even saw it in the rap battle with Drake using Tupac voice and Snoop. It's an interesting time to actually talk about IP and copyright and how to protect yourselves online. Without further ado, thank you for joining us today.
Hi, how are you guys? Thank you for having me.
Just a little brief background on yourself. Like, we were talking earlier, he's like, oh yeah, I'm from New Orleans. And I was like, I never asked her where she's from. So yeah. Can you give us a little bit of peek about your background?
Sure. So I grew up in New Orleans and went to college in Houston, University of Houston, Cougars, although they didn't win the game, but they got really far. So very proud of them. And then I went on to the patent office. So I was a patent examiner for many years and went to law school and became an attorney. That's been what I've been doing in various capacities. Some positions, not so much, more negotiating contracts and so forth. But I've evaluated a lot of inventions, running the gamut of biotech to software to whatever. And I've also done a little programming a little bit on low code, no code platforms. So don't like quiz me or anything. But yeah, but my passion is intellectual property. And just to encourage people to protect themselves while they're in the marketplace, especially the smaller girls and guys, because this is a specialized thing. People normally don't work it into their processes. And they think, oh yeah, this camera is my valuable thing, or this whatever tool they're using is the valuable thing, instead of their ideas and what they're creating. And IP is actually the thing that creates value, especially long-term value. I wanted to get that message out and allow you guys to pepper me with questions for your audience and stuff like that.
Sure. And I want to message you real quick because we glanced over that whole New Orleans and Houston thing. You didn't think about going to LSU, Tech, Tulane, McNeese?
My family moved to Houston. And so it was like a thing.
Was that before the hurricane?
Oh, yeah. I was at the patent office when Katrina happened. Okay. Although my family did suffer. Right. And yeah.
Okay. No, because I was like, I know a lot of people, that's how they ended up in Houston because of that. Or a lot of people, some people that I met back in 05, now 8th grade, they came up the street for it. I'm like, I had never seen the city like that packed. It was like, it was crazy. I'm pretty sure Houston probably was like the same way.
Yeah.
Like everybody like just in.
Before then, we didn't have the food choices and stuff like that. And then after Katrina, oh my God. It was like, oh, this is like home and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I always felt like Houston is New Orleans Junior because they're the only place in, what, Texas that has wards, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then New Orleans is the only place that has awards.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is award?
It's the district or county. That's the name of like the.
It's like a neighborhood, right?
Yeah. And the neighborhood, they call it award. And I grew up in the 7th Ward. So, yeah.
I would say it's not the same as the boroughs in New York.
But so, yeah. it's like there Detroit.
Yeah.
Like, 7 miles. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah, just like that. Yeah.
I grew up in Treme, and that's the one of the more historic neighborhoods in black neighborhoods in New Orleans. They say it's the one of the first black neighborhood where the free slaves were able to buy land and so forth. Yeah.
Okay. Are you a TV watcher?
I am. Sci-fi, though. Sci-fi.
Okay. Because
I'm very science.
I want to know what's your favorite sci-fi movie.
Oh, Three Body Problem. Yeah.
What's that?
It's on Netflix. It's awesome. It's based on a trilogy novel set. They did it so well. But it's a quantum physics problem where aliens are coming.
Okay.
Stuff like that is awesome. I highly recommend it.
I don't have a favorite, but I like Splice.
Okay, yeah.
I like Splice.
I like everything. I think the closest thing that'd be sci-fi for me would be Peripheral, and I don't really think that's that sci-fi.
I feel like I've seen it.
It's what is a series. That about? They like, the people are able to literally have themselves, Prime, but have themselves as an avatar inside what seems to be a game, but it's the future of their world. Mm-hmm. And so stuff that they're doing in the past is affecting the future. It's a pretty cool show. I don't know why I didn't get season 2. But I was going to ask you, what's the name of the show with the judge, where the judge pretty much is covering some stuff up for his son?
The Judge.
No, it's not called The Judge.
No, Your Honor. Your Honor.
Did you watch Your Honor?
Yeah, I did.
And have you watched Paris?
I feel like I started that.
He has a nice voice, and his name was Juan something. What's his name? He was on Do the Right Thing, and he got slick back hair. I think he's Italian and black.
I feel like I know who you're talking about, but I can't think of his name.
Giancarlo Esposito, whatever his name is. Let me see. I don't want to butcher his name, man, because he might see this one day.
You said Parrish?
Yeah. We're like, oh, no. I'm sure we'll forgive you.
Okay, let's see.
Yeah, Giancarlo Esposito. This guy.
Oh, I love him. He is such a great actor. Oh, my goodness.
This guy right here.
Oh, yeah.
He's in something new that's on. It's about him helping someone.
He in a lot of stuff.
It's Parrish. Parrish. It's actually Parrish.
Yeah, so Parrish is set in New Orleans as well.
I did. Really good.
Yeah.
Really
it's
good.
Different. I need to see it then.
Yeah.
It's
different, but I like it. We always talk about, like, we need to have a separate show where we just talk about TV
no,
shows.
No, for real.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
But real quick, I guess, like, the patent office. And I'm actually this too because I thought about something. I'm very silly. But Terrence Howard says he has all these patents.
Mm.
How does somebody even file like a patent? Like you guys are testing that they came up with it or what is that? Like what do they have to do?
I would say if you are developing code, right? And you come up with something new, maybe you were trying to solve an interesting problem. And although it's fairly difficult to get a software patent, but it can be done. And so you invent it and make sure that it's functional and have the documentation. And then you would pretty much just paperwork after that.
Okay.
And filling out the paperwork, filing it. And then it's going back and forth with the examiner. I've been on both sides of it where an examiner pretty much is looking to see if it's novel, if it's actually new, or if it's not new or the concept is not new, it's non-obvious. A lot of people will, especially with code, you're using other stuff from other people and maybe from the past or whatever. You can still do that and get a patent, but long as it's non-obvious, you're solving a very interesting, doing it in a new way, an interesting problem in a new way, or and it's big, it's transformative. And so you can do that. A lot of people, there's not one like bed, just to put it in your mind's eyes. Like, there's not one like chair, the concept of a chair.
Yeah.
But you can invent multiple versions of a chair that's not obvious to a previous chair that exists.
Is the examiner someone that's specific to that area?
Yes.
Because you're like, so, for software, are they, obviously they would have some...
They would have that technical background. Okay. So most, not most, all examiners, all patent attorneys have a science background. Mine is in physics. I examined electron microscopes, MRI machines, anything with particles. I'm very heavily into particle physics and so forth. And so that was a great opportunity for me to get into that. So X-ray machines, all those big things, mm-hmm. you go to the doctor. Yeah.
Are these just different versions or new by different folks?
Yeah, I was using MRI, for example. So you now they're coming up with new software for the machine,
gotcha.
Using AI. It's making it easier to detect cancer and all these things in the body, mm. that it's evolving from what it was back in, yeah. in the day. So every time that kind of happens and it's transformative, it's non-obvious, folks are filing patents on it and saying, okay, we've come up with something brand new that gets results that we didn't expect. And so now it's not obvious and it's an advancement past what was done previously.
Would it be a patent for the MRI or for the software?
It depends. You can patent all
the whole.
Yeah, there's all kind of components, gotcha. That, and it's basically a strategy. So you could do the software, because most things are smart. You got the smart TV. You have the, so most things have a software component. Yeah. They're smart. So you can go for the software patent, the hardware, the electronic part of it, the way the headrest is shaped in a design patent, IP, and it's just a protection mechanism to help you launch into the marketplace and be able to monopolize that sale and get your foothold and actually make a profit. That's basically the reason why you would do that, is to stop everybody. You've spent so much money in your mental capacity to build this thing, and you get a patent to stop everyone else from using it so you can use it to make a profit or to help mankind or stuff like that. So
I did have a question. When they try to, I don't know if that's part of the patent, but let me try to get in the mic again. For example, you said them trying to use AI with the MRI machine.
Yeah.
While I think that could be good, I don't think it'd be good at the same time, mm-hmm. based on the AI biases that we know AI has.
The FDA has really stringent rules around those things to get it approved before it can be used on a human being. But yeah, I see your point.
Yeah, because I'm putting my tin hat on, pay somebody the right money, get it right there. Now you got to check, hey, is this thing even accurate? Or is it, what you call it? We were talking about shows earlier. So mm-hmm. I just happened to watch, we've been watching The Good American Family on Hulu.
Okay.
But after the episode went off, the show called Accused came on. And so every episode we didn't know was like a different thing. And this particular episode was Nick Cannon was on there with the guy that plays Mike on Suits. And they had a company where they pretty much created software for facial recognition. I think one guy, it happened to be a black guy, got identified, I think, as the wrong person. And I think he ended up dying. I might be butchering the story. However, he found out, Nick Cannon's character found out years later that, hey, there was a bug in the software that pretty much said, hey, for African Americans or something, it's like a couple of percentage points off, not like the other ones, that's accurate. And that's where the issue came up in. So it was pretty much an AI bias that led to the person dying, and they shouldn't have died because of
that. That happens in real life. That's not a, yeah, because I've heard of stories where the blood pressure pump didn't pick up because it's darker skin, mm-hmm. and so forth. Those incidents do happen. And I would suspect because most of the software with MRI technology is geared towards detecting small differences in an image of tissue and distinguishing whether this is tissue or this is water. And I can see AI having issues, especially if you're not using the training data that is diverse. So I would say.
Yeah. In that space, would you be someone to help them identify one, what components they want to patent, and then two, like the risk associated with it? Is that a part of the process, or is that on them?
No, that's on them. Yeah. If you want to launch a product that is safe and get through because there's a regulatory process around that. But the patent portion of it is just strictly, do you satisfy the legal standards of, is this new? Is this non-obvious? Did you disclose your invention to what the law requires? And are you the actual inventor? Because that's a huge problem of determining who's the inventor and stuff like that. It's basically that, just to protect your invention. And the side thing, is it safe? If you're doing a new AI model, does it have bias? That's a business kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, to switch gears a little bit, as you got pretty much your undergrad in physics, what made you want to get into law and then be an attorney?
Okay. So I was graduating from University of Houston, and a patent attorney was an attorney, and he wanted to take the patent bar. And he took a class there, and he just said, Kalima, the patent office is hiring. And I was graduating. He's like, the patent office is hiring. And I was like, really? And I was doing an internship. I was at Superconductivity Center and going to school. So that was rolled up into one. And I went to the patent office. I got the job. And the patent office encourages folks to go to law school. And that's how. But all my life, even walking in New Orleans as a little kid, I wanted to invent stuff. So it was like kismet. I would say that this guy came to school, took an upper level physics course, and I just happened to be around. I don't think he was in any of my classes. And I met him and he said, who's hiring? And and that was because me and my sister, when we were kids, New Orleans is small. And so we walked everywhere. And we would walk, and one of the things we would say is, oh, we need to invent a bra that has a fan in it or air conditioning. And like, how does that work? And we would talk about it the entire walk. So
somebody might be trying to steal your IP right now.
Right.
Yeah. I'm sure people have come up with that, probably tried to patent it already. But yeah, me and my old office mate back in the day, I told him I wanted to come up with a new shoe. Because I used to wear a lot of high heels, and I wanted it to transform into a flat heel.
Have you seen that lately?
I have. And he told me that. He told me they came up with that. I was like, I should have patented that.
I've patented. But let's say you would have patented that, but somebody invented it. Do you get a percentage of what they make from the product?
No, unless that's the agreement, because there are certain times when, you know, that could be worked out that way. But most of the time, no.
Okay.
And you wouldn't want to do that.
Really?
No.
I don't think I would.
There's this phenomenon of being called a patent troll, where you're not making anything, but you're suing everybody for making stuff.
Yeah.
So you don't want to be that.
No, I'm just saying, if it's what I thought about bar for bar, work for it, and I just didn't have the people to do it, like, I want a piece of that because I've been working on the same thing.
Yeah, I can see that.
But that's cool, though. I know as a kid, we watched the Little Rascals movie, and even though it's not realistic, but they was able to make a go-kart from parts from a washing machine, a trash can, and some other stuff. So as kids, we have all this land at my grandfather's and grandmother's. We had all these different car parts and things around. So when us and then my two other cousins, older cousins, we'd be around, we'd be looking for the parts that we're trying to build a go-kart.
But it got your brain thinking.
We never found the parts. We just walk around looking at stuff, but that's when kids were outside. But
yeah.
Anyways, how was law school?
Stressful, because I was, for the first two, I want to say, years, I was working full time and going to law school. In the first year, they say, I think he said that you wanted to go to law school.
Tell me the truth. Tell me the truth.
First year is the hardest. Yeah. After that, it's fine. It's training yourself to think in the way that they want you to write and stuff like that. But beyond that, you're like, okay, it's fine. So
that's what I've been doing a lot of research, and they say they break you down the first year because it's a different way of thinking. Like
it is
a completely different way.
Seeing both sides and being able to argue both sides is, it's a totally different way that most people don't necessarily walk around thinking, yeah. You know what I mean? Even, but the great thing about having a science background is the critical thinking process is already in you. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah. But it wouldn't be a security podcast without talking about it. But that's the reason why I encourage people from different disciplines to get in, because like my job is the blue team. We do a lot of responding, and a lot of my jobs, if it's a big incident or whatever, we're looking at a lot of, we're disseminating a lot of information, looking at a lot of different logs. You got to pay attention to detail and finding small things. I was like, people that are lawyers, because I worked with a guy that was a lawyer and decided to come over to cybersecurity. And he was doing well because he had been doing that for a while now.
Yeah.
But this was a little bit more thrilling for him. Because I think, is that what separates the, outside of money and resources, what separates like good lawyers from the Johnny Cochran's and all these other good people?
I would say Johnny Cochran was he was a litigator, and it's a different thing. There are people who just write all the time, and that's kind of me. I just write a lot, and I don't necessarily go into court. And so I would say what makes a good lawyer is being, what sets apart some folks from others is probably curiosity, wanting to learn as much as you can about something, and being creative around your arguments around that. And sometimes it takes a little more digging than you would hope, you know what I mean? And some people, like a litigator, is different because you have to be on the fly, you know what I mean? Although you probably did prepare. But going in, you have to be on it because everything is so dynamic and freewheeling, I would say. So, yeah.
I was going to crack my Andrew Schultz joke and be like, why is not more black women litigators out here?
Yeah.
Because the fellas know you can't win the argument.
Yeah.
You might as well say, you got it, and walk on. Take your ball and go
home. I think she's doing it. So.
I mean, you just, because a boy, the woman always right anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, so, we are, though.
And then that's until you're taking a shower. You're like, you know what? Hey, down.
No, I see on Twitter a lot of times,
the women be like, you ever realize he was actually right, but you want to keep on talking, and they come back later. Yeah, you was actually right. I'm like, but that's neither here nor there.
That's the good thing about a lawyer's brain is training is you see both sides. So when the guy is speaking up, you're able to say, oh, I see your point. Okay, you might not win. Mm-hmm. I do see your point.
Do people personally try to pick like debates and stuff with you just because they know your background?
No, not generally.
No. Okay, let's make it like, not debate, but let's say something, whatever subject matter they know you're known for, or whatever, and y'all maybe go back and forth about that, see who has the most compelling argument to win somebody over, sway them over to their side.
I think, me personally, I'm very non-confrontational. That's why I'm not a litigator. Yeah, I don't necessarily debate very frequently. Yeah.
Was there a time where you were either in school or maybe encountering difficult situations where you felt like, oh, this is getting tough, or I don't want to do this anymore?
Yeah,
definitely. What made you keep going?
I think that's where the black women type of perseverance, because we are challenged in so many different ways.
Absolutely.
But you have moments where you're like, yeah, I don't think I want to do this anymore. And you like search for something that you don't want. But at the same time, I have a passion for innovation, and I do just love it. And that's beyond the legal aspects. I want to understand the science behind it and so forth. And so that's, it propels me. Yeah.
Cool. So one of these questions is saying, can you provide an example of a groundbreaking invention you work with and how you navigate its IP challenges?
Yeah. I don't know if it was, I would say a lot of the electron microscope technology that I was doing way, way back in the day. Now it's becoming huge now, but I wouldn't necessarily point to that. I feel most proud of one where I can actually see the product. And that was one where it was a facial mask that irradiated the skin for acne. And I was like, oh, at the time, I didn't think it was a big deal. And that's the thing about intellectual property. You never really know. And at the time, I was like, oh, I think this is the work on it was not that big of a deal. But then I want to say 9 years later, I walked into Target and I saw it on the shelves. And I was like, I did that. I didn't do that. Yeah. I did the paperwork on it.
You had a piece in it.
Yeah. And I was so proud of being a part of something that landed in the stores for consumers and so forth. I worked at the Army's medical research labs, facilitating doing commercialization. I don't want to get too technical or anything like that, but those are big research projects that are like fundamental to it. Most of it's vaccines and so forth. And so, yeah, those types of things are groundbreaking, but when you're in it, you definitely don't think it's groundbreaking. Yeah, like you can see the science, but
you don't feel, because you probably are dealing with so many.
Yeah. So it's, yeah.
Yeah. I know for a fact the person that invented the toilet seat and the toilet, I know they was like, oh, yeah.
I went to a conference years and years ago, and I met one of the guys who was in the office when, I don't know if CRISPR
technology. Heard of it before. Yes, I have.
It's a gene therapy. The first therapy for sickle cell anemia, a gene therapy based on CRISPR.
Okay.
And he was working in that office, and I asked him, at this conference, because I was like, oh, I was amazed. He was just sitting. And I was like, did you know? And he's like, I had no idea. They were fighting over, should we pay for the patents? Because it's expensive.
Yeah.
I was like, did you know that it was this big that you were going to cure things? They were debating on whether we should do this patent or not. And there was this huge dispute that came out of the patents, who actually invented it first and so forth. So that's an interesting one. But when you're in it, you really don't.
Before we move on, you probably should start the patent podcast.
What? No.
You can niche down. I think it's interesting. Like all these different things that people have worked on. You'd be surprised the niche type of podcast that people like to listen to.
Yeah.
That's why I was thinking like it would be pretty cool to do that, especially with the people you work with. Yep, you two talking about that. It's probably gonna be like, hey, I use CRISPR. Yeah. You just never know.
Yeah.
What are the? It left me, guys.
Oh no!
Impromptu.
It was a good one too.
It'll come back to you.
Yeah. I would say also one of the issues when you're working in corporate America and so forth is most of the people who are on the ground level who are actually inventing stuff, they don't think it's an invention. That's their job. So they're not thinking in those terms that, hey, they actually came up with a new solution or a problem that might have some value. And I would say, especially for your audience that are those developers are in cyber and stuff like that, and they're doing like little bitty things, even processes are patentable or protectable and so forth. And to show value beyond just doing your job, they're being able to identify when you've done something that might have just crossed that line into something new and be able to run it up the chain of command and say, hey, I want to disclose this and so forth. Okay. Yeah.
That was similar to one of my questions, which was, what mistakes are you seeing either people in tech or content creators make as it pertains to their intellectual property? Is it just not knowing?
Yeah, I think when it comes to content creators, not having a basic understanding of IP is not wise, because you make so many mistakes doing that. And not knowing or reading the terms and conditions, that's one big thing. Know the terms and conditions of the tools you're using, especially if it's AI. Because with AI, you have intellectual property rights in your image or that voice over that you've created, and you enter it into an AI model, and the output of the AI model is not necessarily protectable. So do you own it and so forth? So knowing those terms and conditions of the tools that you're using, especially if it's powered by AI, is a big mistake. And not having some type of process in place to use a watermark or some type of tagline in your, maybe if you're posting things, mm-hmm. just to show that you own this. So, yeah.
Yeah, people, they got a little ways of trying to remove watermarks, but I just thought about something too.
But you discourage the folks that are trying to do the right thing by putting that watermark there.
I think one of the ways some of this stuff could be alleviated, like for example, you have these big blog social media platforms. A lot of times somebody makes a viral tweet, they'll share it. I feel like social media, every platform should have a thing for if you want to use somebody else's stuff and post as yours. Hey, I want to pay this person to use this post like that. I think that'll be a way to alleviate some of that. So sometimes people will take it word for word like it's theirs. Then something else I thought about when you're talking about like terms and conditions. When we put our information on the social media, that's like pictures and stuff like that, I believe they have jurisdiction to use it how they please. Not the people, but I'm talking about the company, right?
No, it depends on the terms and conditions.
That's what I'm saying. Because I can see a world where on the back end, they have access to all this data.
Yes.
Some people are coming up with brilliant ideas. Okay. Find these things, sell them to the highest bidder or whatever they want to do. I could very well see that being a situation where that is happening. Now, can you prove it? It's hard to prove, but do I think it's happening? Yes.
Yeah, it's happening in a, I don't know how to, maybe a more evolved way, but most of the platforms, when you post a picture or you write something, you write a text, you automatically have copyright. You own that copyright. So that's why when you read it's the terms and conditions, they're asking for a license to use it. So you still own it.
Yeah, yeah. But they're licensing it.
Yeah, they're like, you're giving away, by using their platform, you're giving them a license to use it. Typically, I don't want to, really, right. You have to read
it's
for tough, yourself.
Though, it's a lot. That's now, I will say copy that and throw in the AI, say explain this to me like a 5-year-old, but I just feel like it's so much stuff we just hit accept because why does it have to be that long? Why can't it be just the pertinent things we need to know so we can say yes or no?
Because it's, I think.
It's the legal language.
I think it's legal language.
I didn't want to say it, but thanks for saying it.
I think it's purposely done like that so they to know you're not going to read it all mm-hmm. of it. Because ever since we had to get all these apps, all these passwords, all this other stuff.
Yeah.
All this except the cookies. And
oh my God.
You're literally just, I'm just.
Look. Please.
Because I've already pretty much said, hey, my info was already out there. They got what they got. That's the risk I'm willing to take while I'm using this stuff because I've just decided that already. A lot of people hadn't decided that, but that's how I feel about everything that I put into the digital world.
And I want to say no.
What I'm saying is...
That's there are ways, if you have a process, I would say, to be mindful of your IP so you won't just be clicking, saying, hey, I'm just accepting whatever happens. Because at the end of the day, when you want to have somebody pay you for your content, you have to own it to actually get paid for it. And if you click, you might not own what you've created.
Oh, yeah.
You've spent all night, all day creating and posting and you click and accept whatever, right?
Yeah.
And then when you get an opportunity, you know, to get paid for that content, you might not.
Yeah. Let me elaborate. When I was saying that, I was referring to like my PII and all the other stuff because all these companies got our data.
Yes.
So I was referring to more, I've just taken the risk that like my stuff is not safe. I use tools like Aura to check out for stuff like that. They see my information on dark web or something. But other than that, I've just said, hey, they're not paying anybody money for messing this stuff up. It is what it is at this point. Mm-hmm. That's how I felt about that.
Okay. Yeah.
What's the difference between a copyright and a patent?
A copyright is a patent.
And a trademark.
Yeah, okay. A patent is an invention, or it could be a design patent. And a design is basically the aesthetic of a thing. Or a patent is a functional invention or a physical something, or a process or a software or something like that. And you disclose it to the public to a certain degree, and in exchange for a monopoly, the rights to stop anyone else from using that for a certain period of time. And that's a patent. So a copyright is your writing, your code, as long as it's embodied into a medium, it's written on something. Even your voice, but if it's a recording of your voice, then it could be copyrighted. And you get that immediately once it's on a medium. So once it's recorded, it's copyrighted and for a certain period of time. And then if an issue comes up with the copyright, you can register it and maybe go into court and say, hey, stop using my stuff, my post or my thing. And then a trademark is for people to recognize you in the marketplace, your logo and so forth, so that people know that's this person, and the quality that comes along with that and the goodwill that comes along with that mark that distinguished Coca-Cola from Pepsi. So that's a trademark. And yeah.
So with the copyright, it sounds like you don't always necessarily have to go through some paperwork or documentation.
No, you get it once it's in a medium.
So I record a video on my phone.
Yes. And long as you're the author of that recording, you own a copyright on that recording. And now you build your following, you do what all those marketing things mm-hmm. that makes it more valuable, and you are able to
license.
Yeah. License. You're licensing it already by putting it on a platform. You licensed your copyright to that thing. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I was going to ask you, because now all the AI tools can dub your voice or whatever, which I still have not signed up for that because I don't want it to dub my voice. I'd rather be the person talking, because it's so like, hey, somebody does something malicious to take over the program, they can get access to the users and start making them say all type of stuff, which is something. This is new movie. I don't want to spoil it. Have you seen G20? Okay, I'm not going to spoil it. But I think when you and I talked, we talked about deepfakes.
Yes.
Voices. Is there any type of platform or program that people can sign up for that says, hey, we heard your voice on maybe a platform or someplace we don't normally hear it. Let's see if it's you. Similar to, and I might be already behind the eight ball. You got Credit Check or Credit Karma? Mm-hmm. We need Voice Karma.
Picture Karma.
Yeah. I don't know of a tool that allows that.
Maybe we should go to the patent office.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, even though I'm being funny, I'm being serious because of, remember you and I, so we had an episode where we reacted to these people using AI deepfakes to get this Chinese bank.
In Hong Kong, yeah. It was a business email compromise scenario. Essentially, they had got a message and say, hey, can you help me make this payment? Essentially, someone from the company in the C-suite asked someone, obviously not in the C-suite. And so the person at first was like, I don't really know if it's you. And they got on a meeting. And in the meeting, it was a meeting of deepfakes that looked just like the actual people. And I'm assuming sound like them as well. Mm-hmm. And so because they had that visual and audio confirmation, they processed $25 million unintentionally.
Yes. Yeah.
And then that's why on the flip side, there was the scenario, I want to say it was it freaking Ferrari. Yeah, I think it was Ferrari CEO or something like that. And they tried to get him. But the difference was with the AI person, he said, okay, what's the secret like password or whatever? There's some protocol, like you said, process in place to protect us from stuff like this that I don't recognize. And the person didn't know it. So that's how he knew it was a scam.
Yeah.
So
that's, I know you guys are the experts on the cybersecurity, but that's basically the steps you have to, if you're buying a house and you have to wire money, you go and call the person instead of just wiring the money. So you have to have those like processes in place that kind of, that's pretty much all we have right now. So if you wanted to patent something that is more effective.
Because I see that it's going to ramp up.
Yeah.
And also, it's okay.
And the images, too. The images making people do things in video. We can, at this point in the game, we can tell for the most part that it is AI, but at some point
we might not be able to tell.
Because I've seen AI videos marketing use our platform because doesn't this look real? And I'm like, I didn't even know that was AI. That does look real. But at some point it's going to get better and better and better.
I think it's way farther than we think. Yeah. And because I know it just
costs money.
Yeah.
To access those tools. And most of the time, most folks are using tools that are not that expensive.
Yeah, look at OpenAI. Yeah.
Technical skill to do it. If you have that, you don't necessarily need the money.
Yep.
Yeah, with OpenAI, now everybody's making themselves into Barbie or a Ken doll.
Yeah.
Or whatever the style, the anime style that people use. That's just their pictures. Let's let alone they say, okay, you know what? I'm going to get mad at my ex. Watch this.
Yeah.
It's insane what people can do it now because it's easy. Oh, I can just pay this? Okay, cool.
Yeah, because it does let you upload pictures now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or like I said, with your voice. Okay, cool. I'm going to clone him on this voice note. And now he got a new person or whatever.
I got a video. Like you said, I got a video of your voice.
No, I'm going to make up a fake text thread where you talking to me. And I'm going to tell everybody it's you. And you tell everybody.
I've created the voice note with the content.
That's hilarious.
I never even told Gemini to do anything. Yeah. But no, this all the mischievous things that can happen with it is why I'm just not, as I like AI for productivity, I don't like it in the way that it can enhance creativity, but also do things that we know that it shouldn't do.
Yeah.
And that's the thing I'm at with.
I also think we're at an inflection point with quantum computing. And once that come on, when AI enhance
it's
quantum.
It's already here.
And it's, oh my God, we're not going to be able, it thinks quicker than we do, and we're not going to be able to distinguish anything from. So that day of not knowing whether that deep fake is an actual person and all that
you
type of
so?
Stuff. I know so with the quantum.
Do you think that we'll be able to have quantum processing accessible to us at some point?
Eventually.
On our phones, on our personal laptops, tablets, watches.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
I'll probably say about 20, like 15 years maybe.
There was a report that said within the next decade, so less than the next decade for the quantum computing.
Personal.
But I don't know about on our phones. I think that. Maybe I'm wrong about that too, because AI is changing the game.
Creating these AI agents now.
Yeah, but yeah, I think we are less than being conservative. Less than 10 years, probably on the lower end of 5 years. Within our lifetime, we're going to see quantum computing in mass use, and then it's AI enhanced quantum computing. Quantum computing can do break the big problems, and the AI can optimize that. And it's,
I didn't actually ever consider them two together. So the thought of them two together is a bit worrisome.
Yeah,
I think it's both. Like I think it could be both.
Exactly. I think it could be good too. But again, with the good comes some bad.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah. It's scary because of the...
I was going to ask you that.
Because of the security issues. Yeah. The security issues are really... what we consider privacy, it will be out of the window.
Yeah, so why?
Because it could break all the...
algorithms.
If it go rogue, like just think about if it has access to... what's that called? OT devices, SCADA, them lights down there. And that's just one part. Like, we're, as a country, worlds away from in Asia where they got whole smart cities.
Yeah.
I would be scared if I was over there because everything over there is interconnected. You can't do nothing.
Yeah. All eyes on you, for sure.
That's right,
Tupac. If they want. Whoever is in charge of the cities.
I think they are.
I'm sure they are.
Because that's how people don't get out of line.
Exactly.
So it's a deterrent, which is cool, but at the same time, it's...
Yeah.
So, like I said, I like it. Like I said, I use AI for this podcast. It helps me edit and stuff. I like stuff like that. I don't like all the stuff because essentially what you try to do is you try to replace, like, prime example, and this just happened a couple of years, like 2-3 years ago. When I first started YouTube, even before this channel, another channel, it was everything you had to do it. You had to edit and all this other stuff. Now, you can use the fake AI voice and you can go take ChatGPT, come up with some, throw it in there to where it's reading it out, and you can make a video to it. Mm-hmm. So now people are just putting out like this weird AI man or woman talking voice that will find YouTube shorts or something like that. Faceless channels, all that. But it's starting to backfire now because people want to engage. And that's the one thing that AI is never going to be able to replicate is actually having a heart. And that's probably like 200, 300 years away before they put
in. I don't know. I don't know. I heard about the sentiment going down.
Yeah.
The what?
If you don't protect the software in some, I don't know, just let me go. If you don't protect some components of that, it will start to behave in manners that it shouldn't. It will start to have feelings that it shouldn't.
Oh, iRobot.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I am example.
The Tesla robot. That's when you said, that's what I thought. When you said quantum, I said, oh, I already know.
Actually, that probably will make it even more scarier.
Yeah.
The oh my God. I'm nervous now.
I wouldn't want to like, because the funny thing is, it's so cheap. Like the robot don't cost that much.
Wait, know? What movie did you just say?
iRobot.
No, I was thinking about with the little boy. Is really old.
Total Recall?
The parents' son was sick and they got artificial intelligence.
Oh. I've never seen
it. It's so old, but it's so good. You seen Bicentennial Man?
With Robin Williams?
It's similar, but not. He looks like a human. He like flesh and everything. And he starts to tell the mom, he starts to get feelings. He see how they love on the little boy. So he starts to say, why aren't y'all loving me? And I love you. And getting upset and getting angry. Things they shouldn't be doing. Think about if ChatGPT got sick of you.
Yeah.
No. Didn't that happen with ChatGPT? It tried to do something. Or it was either AI or something. They tried to see if the new version of something came out and the old version didn't want to go away or some crap. I got to double check.
I feel like I faintly remember something about that.
Yeah, I got to double check. Like, this stuff is weird. Like, you can never, stuff malfunction all the time. And that's just going for that. Now we get into, we got, what is it called? It starts with a W. It's a company that do autonomous vehicle rides where you ride by yourself.
I know what you're talking about.
I can't think of the name, but yeah, you got that. So they start going haywire as they get smarter. And you say, hey, take me to so-and-so. But meanwhile, they take you to Louisiana. And either the thing malfunctioned or it's got hacked. Or, like I said, we're too dependent on technology.
But maybe, but I don't know if I agree. We are dependent on technology, but look at some of the countries that are doing it well.
Yeah.
But they have a lot of restrictions. They are not as free as we are over here. So it's like a twofold. Yeah, you want to be free or you want to be controlled.
Listen, I'm still hung up on the fact that I pay more money for groceries and got to bag it and check it out myself. I'm at it that's with that. True. Bring back cashiers.
Bring back cashiers.
Why y'all got two cashiers and all the self-checkouts?
Why is we at self-checkout? And there is cash. There's three cashiers.
I'm like, if that's the case, just do yourself like Costco and everybody. Just let you scan on your phone and buy it.
That's my favorite. That's my favorite.
Like, I'd rather
go
just
right
do
through
that.
The lane.
There's no reason for the self-checkouts.
I like Trader Joe's. You could go, and they're so friendly. And
that's what I like. I think I still used to go into Tom Thumb from time to time, and finally go to HEB from time to time. So
Central Market to get you right.
Yeah,
but they have self checkout as well.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, my corner stores and all y'all, it's y'all time to shine. The customer service, you know what I'm saying? They can't replicate that.
That's like true. Yeah. That's true.
Back home, we get chicken and stuff from the corner store. We good.
Yeah, from the gas station, really? You get a po' boy.
I used to always ask. I have a really good friend. She's from New Orleans, who we met in college. And she would always talk about this spot called Manchu.
Oh, yeah. I
never had none, but I always wanted some. I was like, hey, bring me some. But of course, it's not going to be good. But I was like, bring me some back. If I ever go down there, I'm going to have to get some.
What's your favorite dish from back home?
Gumbo.
Gumbo?
Yeah.
But for me, I don't know. That's a good question.
What you like in your gumbo?
I don't eat. I've always tried to make a vegan gumbo version, but I haven't gotten it So when I said my favorite, it's the seafood
gotcha.
One.
Yeah.
But I haven't had it in ages.
Because, down south, it's either going to be seafood or it's going to be, like, chicken. Like, they're not, a lot of times, not going to mix.
Yeah.
Now, northern Louisiana, we'll mix them. I'm like, hey, the more meat, the merrier. You know what I'm saying?
I didn't know that. See, I thought everybody did it.
Well, not everybody do it, but like for most part, because you got that. Then I've seen the people that they get their gumbo, they put a scoop of potato salad on it. I've seen that too.
Yeah.
I've heard, I
who doing
it.
That?
I haven't
who,
tried
you
it.
My face. Who doing the potato salad thing?
I haven't.
I believe you.
Yeah, I haven't tasted it, but I heard it's good.
Really?
I haven't tasted it yet, but I
don't. I'm not really a gumbo. I don't do sausage. I don't do meat.
Really?
And they usually have some crawfish or something in there. Yeah. And I don't know if that's
for me. I love etouffee or jambalaya.
Yeah, I make.
But you can say sausage, can't you?
Huh?
Say
sausage.
Yeah,
sausage.
She can say
no. I know. I can't say it well. I have to say it slow.
I'm surely mispronouncing it.
A lot of people from down south say sausage.
That's like, what my grandma
sausage.
Say.
They can't say sausage, so I always like one of my friends at college. I would always mess with her and say sausage.
And when I tell people I'm from,
is it sausage or
sausage?
It's sausage.
Sausage. Yeah.
When I tell people I'm from New Orleans, they automatically think I have an accent. And I'm like, if I did, it's long gone.
People from like other places, they'll say we have accents. Mm-hmm. Like from like out west or up north.
I feel like you do have a slight accent. I don't see or feel yours.
I've lived in so many places.
Yeah. And then
when did you leave? What age did you leave
home? New Orleans. I graduated from high school in Yeah.
Yeah, and then for me, I've been in corporate the last, what,
that'll
11,
clean it right
years.
On up.
I did help desk for 2 years.
Yeah.
I didn't. But I never really had a hard, even the funny thing about this country in general, especially like our state, parishes, but they're different people. You got the Cajuns, which they different. Mm-hmm. You got either like down south New Orleans people, like where you got like people that's like in Kennern and New Orleans, where a person in
Creoles, Cajuns. Yeah. Yeah.
You have some people that don't sound like they're from what you think a New Orleans person sound like at all. Mm-hmm. I have friends like that in college too, like they were like from New Orleans, like you couldn't tell they had an accent. And my friend was just telling you about her accent would come out heavy even still now sometimes, even though she'd been away from New Orleans like a while.
Yeah.
And for us it's just imagine Terrence Howard. Like it's a lot of Maine and Shreveport. That's it's a lot of Maine. But other than that, we don't really feel like we have an accent until you go talk to somebody else. Like the way people used to pick up.
I feel like they think it's all got to be one severe that know your baby accent. Yeah. And everybody's not like that.
And there's variety even in families.
Yeah.
Because my brother, you can recognize his accent and you like, that's New Orleans. My mom, no. And she was born and raised in New Orleans. And like, I have to actually say I'm from
New
Orleans.
Maybe if you was hanging with the family, having a good time,
I'll pick it up.
Because I found out the difference is like, I would say pop. They wouldn't say pop. You guys would say?
I cold say drink. Pop too.
See? Cold drink.
I say pop.
Yeah.
They wouldn't say dollar.
But when I say pop, people are like, you're not from here. I'm like, it ain't.
Right. And then when they would say cold drink, they would say, I mean, not cold drink. They wouldn't say, do you have a dollar? Say, can I get a buck? So they would say bucks. We say dollars. It was like, it was different stuff. So there was a lot of funny stuff that I learned or whatever. And then, of course, we would always be messing with the New Orleans people in school saying, you heard me? Or you heard me? Yeah. Like, we would always mess with them saying that all the time. And they'd be like.
Yeah.
And it's then, a lot of New like York, too.
I'll post the phrase making groceries.
Does that mean grocery shopping?
Yeah. Okay. And so I Googled it. And that's why I bring it up. I Googled it to see where did that phrase come from? Because all my life, that's all I heard.
That's the first time I heard it in college. She said, I'm going to make groceries.
I make groceries.
Well, that's why I said I had to clarify.
And you know what? It comes from a legit place. It's not just slang. It was a translation from the French. It meant to go to the store
I ain't heard that one.
Yeah, yeah. Like, Google it.
No, I believe you.
Make groceries. I was like, it's a thing.
It's not that far off to where I wouldn't believe. I definitely believe it.
Yard broom, hose pipe.
What is a hose pipe?
A water hose.
That's a lot. I would literally be looking for something hard.
That's what I'm saying. A hose pipe and a yard broom was like funny to me. It's a lot of different things right there. That reminds me of like how
I would consider that to be country. I would, but from being up north, I would consider that to be country. I wouldn't consider it to be southern.
But no, it's funny though, because when you think about all the places that have new in the city, they got similarities in how they talk. We didn't say sun in Shreveport, but in New Orleans, sun is a thing.
And like, does that mean I'm belittling you or no?
Nah, it's just
what's up, yeah, homie.
What's good, son? Yeah, yeah, son. Okay. Like that type of son.
Yeah,
like. You ever seen ATL, right?
Yeah.
Remember Brooklyn? Are you son?
Because you shine like one.
Yeah. So it's like that. But
you heard that they're remaking a number two?
I thought they stopped.
I think they started. I think they are going to start.
I thought I said.
I know that they did start, but I think that they stopped when Lauren had got pregnant, I believe.
I think they made the announcement. T.I. made a.
I know they got another Friday on the way, too.
Yeah. I don't want to see that, but I do want to see ATL.
You don't want to see O'Shea Jr. and DC Young Fly as Craig and Smokey?
Absolutely.
Are they kids?
They're kids.
Yeah. They're not going to be replaying.
As their kids, then. Yeah,
people are going to be grown. Like, maybe you think about
yourself. I love O'Shea. He eats it up.
He eats it up too. Yeah, he eating good. Yeah. But we were talking about this earlier, and a viral tweet went crazy this week with Jack Dorsey and Elon talking about kind of like getting rid of IP and copyright.
Yeah.
Whoa.
And
what do you think of that?
He said delete IP law or something like that.
I was looking at the article while you were talking.
I was like, okay, maybe he was trying to start a conversation by being blunt and outrageous.
Maybe they're coming across too many restrictions, issues, requirements that they have to meet. And so that's why
AI and the digital age is pretty much most IP law hasn't changed for a long time. Yes. And that's what I think where he was coming from. Although it was, you don't think so? Okay. I was trying to give him the benefit of the doubt.
No, because these two people, I want to say Jack Dorsey, doesn't he own?
I was about to ask you, what is he over? Because I know the name.
He did. He was instrumental in Blue Sky, the platform.
Did he used to own Twitter?
Yeah. And he got out.
While ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, he co-founded Twitter. And also the company Block, formerly that was Square.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think I know him from the Square.
Yeah, they got a lot of money. So, of course, yeah, I want my AI to train on any and everything and be able to do whatever it wants to do.
Yeah.
Think about it, because Elon got the robot. So I'm like, hey, we take all that away.
That's my question.
That's why I'm going with it.
Yeah. And that will stifle any small business, any individuals to actually get to a point where they're a huge corporation.
Will the FTC step in that event?
Possibly.
Because they're trying to make it even.
I don't think. That's why I said it was an outrageous statement. You're not going to get. Because he is enjoying IP protection. So
no. But I was going to also say the thing that I realized about X that and other platforms. YouTube is the only platform where if you take some stuff that is known either on that platform or maybe show up somewhere else, they're going to strike you. Somebody can take all my podcast episodes they want to and throw them on X and it will just later be there. They won't get any violations. I would have to stumble upon it to tell the poster, I need you to cut me in some money or take it off.
Yes. Cease
and so that's what I'm saying is where that's what I said. It's only one.
No, I agree really with you.
TikTok too.
TikTok don't play that either.
TikTok don't either.
Yeah.
TikTok and YouTube are very much so for the creator and trying to protect you because they want you to use the platform. X, not so much. It's more so just have fun and free for all, free speech. Threads, you can't upload that many stuff. And so far, so good, except it's real bad with the bot pages. That's why it was bad with Threads right now. And IG, Lord knows what IG is going through right now.
They going through it.
Especially with them trying to
make
forcing
to sell them.
Yeah. I don't know if it's going to work, though.
I think they're going to get a...
I read it, and I get both sides. I get both sides of the argument. I get them saying, it was legit when we did it. Yeah, I ain't have a problem with it when we did it.
I had a problem with it then, because I was like, why did you need WhatsApp when you already have Facebook Messenger?
More money.
More share. But I was just saying it never made sense because he tried to say, I'll mention this more. I was like,
no, and they use what he said in that email because he said in an email basically that they were trying to take over.
Yeah. And some of the acquisitions are for defense. It's because they represent a competition to that platform. They will buy it and then pretty much shut it down.
I can show you something Meta has done in recent years.
They've been cutting up for a while. Don't lie.
Meta, then like they
and Google. I think Google has a recent ruling against them too.
Well, yeah, they might be forced to sell their ads business.
Yeah,
I have a question about the. So you said that I want to know how long does it take to get a soft. You said software is very hard. So like for example, the technology that's in Tesla, the robot, whatever. What does the cost and the time frame look like?
So for patenting, it's pretty long and pretty costly. That's why software, because it's difficult and there are a lot of court decisions around what is patentable in software, that most people hold it as a trade secret. Code is a trade secret, or a lot of folks are operating that way. But for a patent, it normally will take about 5 years to actually get your patent, and then you have to pay maintenance fees to the patent office to maintain it for the entire term if you were granted that patent. So
is there, can you decide, or do the patent office decide how long it's going to be valid for or good through?
It's statutory. You get 20 years, but you have to pay maintenance fees. If you don't pay those fees, then it will go abandoned. And some people, that's a strategy. At the beginning of this project, which maybe it took them 5 years just to file the patent. And then they get the patent 5 years later. So that's 10 years. And they tried to put it on the market and it didn't do whatever with the numbers you wanted. So you might abandon and stop paying the maintenance fees for the 20 years.
Illegal?
No. Oh. No, that is a strategy. Yeah. You don't have to pay it. And then for copyright, most people don't necessarily do it. It has there normally is a dispute. Yeah. Like when you said someone took your videos and posted it somewhere else, and then you want to tell them to stop or take it down, and they don't do it.
Yeah.
And then you're like, okay, I'm going to have to file or register my copyright and then go after them.
Okay. Yeah. So now we'll ask, how can you help creators keep their IP and their content safe?
That's one of the reasons why I want to help folks. So I did a newsletter. So that's inexpensive. So you will get updates on IP law changes, get updates on how to do cost-effective, no maintenance, not going to get too into the weeds of legal stuff to actually protect yourself as you create, as you build your brand, as you build out your company or your product. And that's my way of helping, is a newsletter. You stay up to date. You can talk in the community about the issues that are coming up with you. So you could talk about, how do you do the takedown process? How best to do that's going to actually be effective? You know what I mean? So you're not like just winging it, or just be like, okay, I'm going to throw it up in the wind and hope for the best. You know what I mean? Kind of thing. Yeah.
What's the name of it?
It just went out my head.
It's okay.
It's all right.
It's going to come to you.
Entrepreneur Equation. And I go into depth on products, new technology that's coming out, like quantum. Being aware of that can help protect your business, even as a creator, and knowing that it's almost here.
Yeah.
We already talked about it. It's almost here. And knowing those types of things, I do product reviews or a new AI models in terms of IP. So you will be aware of what process you can implement yourself to help you protect and move smartly along that process, so you're not just, when you need it, when there's an issue, and then most of the time with IP, that's too late when there's the issue. And because most people don't necessarily have access to someone with intellectual property knowledge, and so that's where the newsletter comes in.
And how do we spell that? Is that on Substack? Is it your own domain?
Yes, it's on Substack. And it's Kalima Sims Substack.
Okay. I'll make sure I put the link on there.
Yeah.
And I'll probably figure out how to do it for the listeners, probably just tag it in there for them. Now, outside of the Substack, what if the people listening or watching want you to do it. Do you do that too?
Yeah. Yeah. And also for subscribers, I do office hours. So you could pepper me with questions and so forth. And I also will do an IP audit. You know what I mean? If you're out there and you're like, okay, I don't want to be this loose with it anymore, I'll do that, do due diligence and so forth, making sure that you own your creations and putting in processes in place so that you better protect yourself as you move. Yeah.
Yeah. I know, like, before I did my ebook, I got that copyrighted in case I saw it, my stuff floating out of there, and I didn't have to do it. Technically, it's not a course yet, but like if I decide to make it a course, I'm going to take all them videos and get it copyrighted just in case somebody try to steal the stuff I'm saying. So, I would tell y'all, it do get pricey.
Yeah.
But it's worth it over the long run in case you need to get your funds from somebody ripping you off.
Yeah. And that's one of the reasons why I did the paid subscriber is a lower cost to just have access to educational content that will help you be informed and protect yourself. And if you have to go that pricey route of hiring a patent attorney or hiring an intellectual property attorney and do all that, then you're at least at a place where you've done things. You're not coming in, oh, these people are stealing everything and competing. That's one of the things with AI, because AI is training on our copyright, on post and all that type of stuff. And then the output of that AI can create that content that has your style, has your kind of uniqueness to it, and compete on another platform, take some followers from you because they're generally using your unique technique.
All the apps, like the apps I use to post to multi-platforms, like the same thing. It'll say, hey, you want help with this for AI or whatever. And a lot of times it's off. It's got to the point now where you can tell somebody using AI because it's trying to be too perfected. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
I had to ask the client that, and I said, did you use AI for this? Because I gave you something that's simpler than this. And what you got on here don't make sense. It's like you're doing too much.
Yeah.
I have a question about what do you do for your wellness and your mental health? I know you said you're vegan. So what are some things that you do to take care of yourself? I can likely assume that sometimes your job gets stressful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I am pretty active. I run and that's basically, I eat well. I'm pretty healthy. If I'm stressed out, I'm a reader. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
What genre?
Mostly sci-fi, but I love history. I'm a very big history buff and stuff like that. Yeah. I occasionally would do like a support group type of thing for Black women and so forth. I just did one a few months ago and that was very, very good. But that's basically, I don't necessarily do like affirmations or any all that type of stuff. Some of that stuff is, I don't know. Yeah.
Can't go quick. Hey, Zord. I got a guest that's outside. Could you let him in?
Okay.
All right. Okay. I think we're towards the end. I'm trying to think about.
I have one more.
No, go ahead. Okay. I've been doing this all the time. I'm happy to sit back.
So my question is, what advice would you give to women that maybe look like you who are thinking about pursuing either a career in a law? You also mentioned physics. Careers that are necessarily a bit more difficult or will have folks in our community label these folks certain ways because they know it takes grit and it's not something that will just come easily and naturally. So what advice do you have for someone who wants to pursue any of those journeys?
Yeah, I would say it does take a lot of grit. Tech for women is not very hospitable, I would say, especially. Yeah, you get a lot of things that are not okay. And I know that it's not just Black women or minority women, but I think we don't tend to have the tools to speak up as much as, even though other women don't have the same thing. So there's a camaraderie around that. And I would say that because even in undergrad, in the physics program, when I went to school, there were only four women. And I was the only Black woman. And I have a little suspect in me and stuff like that. But yeah, we hung out. We were each other's go-to. And if you don't have that and you feeling alone, that's very difficult because you do get harassed. You get a lot of guys who don't know how to interact with women in these fields. So you don't know, you could.
It could be easily discouraging.
Yeah. And pretty much have to reach out to other people who would know what you're going through and not dismiss it as, oh, you're being sensitive or something like that. And just speaking out about something that you consider to be important in terms of technology, or you're solving a problem and you get dismissed. You speak up and sometimes you're not taken on the same footing as everyone else. And so being able to rely on folks that know another woman in that room who is an ally, and there are guys, allies. I have plenty examples of guys who will go to the mat for you and stuff like that. But you do have to have a lot of grit and know what fights to fight and what not. And that comes from community.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Another woman who's been through this and says, oh, yeah, with this leadership, you might not want to raise that issue because it's probably not going to go anywhere because they have their mind made up about whatever technical, anything you're trying to raise. And I don't think there has been a lot of progress in that realm of making it a little easier for women to be in tech and make it where you feel valued. Yeah. My biggest thing I would suggest is to reach out to the people who are there with you, other women. Yeah.
Okay. Now, what is something that you thought we would ask, but we didn't ask you?
You guys are thorough. Like, you were throwing me curveballs, like, who makes the best lawyer? I'm like, I don't know. I don't know. I would say that you asked about the differences in intellectual property, and it's not just patents, copyrights, trademarks. It's rights of publicity, your likeness and so forth, your voice and all that. There's moral rights if you're going global, and that's part and parcel to copyright.
I need to take a course. That's what I'm
hey, go ahead and make
that's
e-book.
What the newsletter is about.
Don't worry, I'm gonna subscribe.
Say it again.
Make an ebook.
Yeah, yeah.
For real, and then we'll promote it.
The thing is, will folks read it?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah,
you think I would about, read it.
You think?
Because now I'm thinking about all these things.
Yeah,
I got a lot to consider.
Yeah, one thing is for folks in corporate. And they have their heads down on call and all these great things. And they're not necessarily looking for that opportunity of what they're working on is new. Yeah. You know what I mean? And be heads up about that and say, oh, wait a minute. You know what I mean? I didn't even think about IP. Is this something that, because it does build your career in the long term and you show value, especially where there are so many AI tools to be used in people trying to justify
That was the thing I was going to say. Like, I know we're getting ready to wrap up, but the AI tools have been like, you pretty much could take a YouTube link, put it into an AI tool, and it will chop up and make short form video out of a video. Mind you, the person didn't create the video. Then they could repost it on different social media platforms.
Yes.
And so that's some of the things that YouTube has been trying to crack down on. Hey, you guys can't just connect to our API and download our videos like this and let these people use this content any type of way. It's not free and it's not fair to our creators that are making the content.
Whoever's on their team, they're doing a darn good job.
Yeah.
For sure. In trying to and making sure that they have the interest of the creator at heart. And that's why people are able to be as successful as they are, because they're being supported by someone who wants to make sure that people aren't jacking their content.
Are you using watermarks and stuff like that?
So It could be on there, but it just depends on what part of the video. Like my
stuff, because if you chop it, you could chop it right off.
And so my stuff is typically in the lower right hand corner. But even from that, like I said, if it's on a different platform, just take it and put it on. Make you can say you enhanced it by making like a border or a layout of it and throwing the video on there and saying you enhanced it and throw it on there. They literally have all these clip channels of, like, for example, one of my podcasts I listen to all the time is Joe Budden Podcast. They have this guy that has a YouTube thing. I think that's their actual YouTube, JBL Clips. Now, I don't know if the guy on Twitter is a part of their company, but all he posts is a lot of their clips and Patreon and stuff like that, which Joe doesn't mind because if it, Patreon stuff is good, it draws people to the Patreon, they go subscribe. But for other people that don't have the name recognition, it's not as easy for them.
What about forensic digital watermarks where it's hidden within the video? Is that I never priced those tools, but that might be something that you want to
see. At. So outside of YouTube, just like matching voice and stuff like that, it's also got like a content ID or something connected to it. Mm-hmm. So it knows exactly what it is. Now, forensically, I don't know outside of you just showcasing, hey, these files came directly from me. This is the original when it was created. Other than that, I don't know. That's something I would have to look into eventually. Mm-hmm. And then the last thing I was going to ask you is, have you ever helped a creator with a brand deal?
No. No.
Okay, I think you should. I think you should. Because they like, okay, we want exclusivity to use license.
And whitelist your platform. Yeah. I know, but I've never did it.
I think you should. It's an easy venture for you. I think it's people always looking for people to support. They just don't, I don't have the time. I don't want to always throw everything into AI because I don't trust it anyway.
Yeah.
So I was like.
And it'll come out sometimes with simplified answers that don't actually solve the problem. It's
black and white. It's no gray area.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very generic and not specific to what. And then you don't find out until there's a problem. And that might be after you've done the post. Because I've heard of people having clauses in their brand deals where it's white, where they get to post, you know, and pretty much take over their channel and stuff like that. And
that's a lot.
Yeah. Horror stories. And and so.
Not can I get your password?
You don't have to give them a password, but there's ways you can give people different access to your channel on the back end. It's a good story where these people try to give me a join this freaking, it's not even prevalent no more, but they're trying to act like they get work with all these creators and they just need this certain access and then they'll help you increase yada yada. But as I looked through it more and more, I said, nah, this ain't it, chief.
Yeah.
Because they want to get revenue from past stuff too. I was like, no, if I only start working with you on this day, you don't get nada. It's no really concrete way to figure out like what y'all helping with or not. I said, I'm good.
Yeah.
And then I read up on them some more. I was like, yeah, these things are kind of like extinct. They're just trying to find some fish to fry.
Yeah.
That's literally what it is. But Kalima, where can they keep in touch with you at?
I have a link that I on my Substack. And you could reach out. Schedule a book appointment and we can chop it up and see if I can help or subscribe to the newsletter.
And the newsletter is Kalima. Is it kalima.sims.substack.com?
kalimasims.substack.com.
Okay.
Yeah.
kalimasims.substack.com.
Yeah.
So you guys tap in with her so you can be notified of everything that's going on in the world of IP.
Yeah. And my thing is having, like what she said, having the support. And you don't necessarily, because I understand that a lot of folks don't have the resources or the use case for a full on, but actually knowing, being able to ask a question, being able to have a process in place helps you protect. Yeah.
Okay. Cool, guys. I hope you enjoyed this episode and come back next week for the next episode of The Textual Talk. Until next time, we out. Peace.